Join us this Friday for Just One Thing Day on Radio 4 and across the BBC. In a moment this evening, stand-up comedian Jeff Norcutt examines modern masculinity with the help of his audience in a working man's club in Leeds. This week, why don't men wear sunscreen?
Whether it's the sights or the sounds of every match, being closer to the action at Wimbledon makes all the difference.
She is a history maker here at Wimbledon. He's done it!
With your choice of courts, get closer to the action.
Oh, that's fantastic!
Wimbledon. Watch on iPlayer, listen on BBC Sounds.
Now on Radio 4, we head to Leeds, where Jeff Norcutt wants to talk about modern masculinity in his new stand-up series, where this week he asks, why won't men wear sunscreen?
Hello, Jeff Norcott here. This programme is my working man's club. You know, it's sort of like a safe space to talk about the issues facing modern men. Just a quick disclaimer, this is a metaphorical working man's club. Though we do have lots of men, plenty of lager, and we've got a jukebox which only plays tracks by Meatloaf and Queen.
Just a heads up, this is going to be a comedy show, but occasionally we'll be talking about important stuff up to and including feelings. So if you are uncomfortable, we have earplugs that are playing the TMS commentary of Headingley 81. This is the place to discuss proper bloke stuff. But Jeff, isn't that the entire podcast landscape? Yes, there are lots of men talking for many hours in the podcasting world, but what are they really saying? Podcasts have taught us that if an infinite number of male monkeys were given an infinite number of typewriters, they wouldn't create Shakespeare. One would write about the importance of protein shakes and crypto, while the others would laugh hysterically at knob gags. I also accept that in 2024, the phrase proper bloke could seem exclusionary. But let me just answer a few questions. Does our working men's club exclude posh blokes? No. Does it exclude gay blokes? No. Does it exclude blokes who ride unicycles but aren't in the circus? Yes. Because you have to have standards. This working men's club is a place where we can explore the actual experience of being male. How often do you hear it articulated? What does it feel like being a bloke? I can see some of you already looking uncomfortable. Not least because we're recording this in Leeds, which is the home of understated manliness. Yeah. Yorkshire is the kind of place where you're not even allowed to cry when chopping onions. And Leeds is the kind of place where sharing your mental health problems means sighing just before you down a pint. I've gigged here a bit over the years. And don't worry, because to break the tension, from time to time, we will have these manly hypotheticals. You know, the kind of stuff that blokes just talk about in pubs generally. I'm going to ask you one now. Would you rather never be able to eat meat again and nobody finds out, or be able to eat whatever you want, but everyone thinks you're a vegan? Do we have any actual answers to that?
Vegan.
You'd rather everyone, so you have to go around thinking you're a vegan?
Yeah.
And how would that play when you're in Barnsley?
Not great, but my sister would like me more, so it's a bit of a win-win.
Your sister would like you more if she thought you were a vegan?
Yeah.
So you'd be living a lie as a vegan for your sister's love?
For the family's benefit.
Therapy is a great thing. To me, blokishness is a harmony between two seemingly paradoxical things. Firstly, you have to retain some sense of boyishness, a belief that no matter how busy or grown up life gets, you should still be afforded time and space to alphabetize your record collection. Yes, babe, I'll take the bins out in a second. I'm just working out if it should be P for Prince or A for artist formerly known as. Simultaneously, there's a fustiness about the average bloke, right? He'll know that disposing of something at the recycling centre is the middle-age equivalent of a threesome. Let's be honest, once you hit a certain age, it's better than a threesome. For one thing, I know where I stand at a recycling centre, I know what goes where and when it's okay to ask for help. At the end of the show, At the end of the show, we're going to compile some recommendations in the unlikely event the government of the day ever create a dedicated minister for men. Just a little path forward to make men's lives healthier and happier. Okay. All right, got a bit serious. Let's default to one of those manly hypotheticals. How many ducks would it take to kill a full-grown rhino? Third row down there, we've got a taker down there. How many ducks would it take to kill a full-grown rhino?
Just one. If it got itself wedged down its windpipe.
That is actually a really good answer. Yeah, I didn't really think of that. Now, if there are any concerned feminists thinking I'm making a land grab on gender discourse, relax, right? Blokes becoming healthier and happier benefits everybody, and it can only be done at a gradual pace. I'm going for evolution, not revolution, right? Let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. But let's also acknowledge that that phrase probably exists because once upon a time a bloke did that. I get pushback from traditional men as well. Jeff, why are you talking about emotions? Let's just push all our feelings down. It didn't do my dad any harm, and he lived to the ripe old age of 52. Which brings me to this week's subject, health. Now, I know this subject can make you... That silence proves it. It can make your average bloke a bit uneasy. So let me ask this following question as a slightly gentler way in. Give us a cheer, any blokes who went on holiday in a hot country will automatically apply sun cream. Well, it felt like a lie. That pause... That was a liar's pause. All right, and of those of you who did cheer, give us another cheer if you did that without prompting from a wife or partner. Okay, liars. Just straight up shameless lying. Men are statistically far less likely to buy and use sun cream. Both the medical profession and the skincare industry, they acknowledge this. It once prompted an article in Bazaar. Men would rather die than wear sunscreen. I mean, I hope they didn't stress test that with gangs of hooded gunmen on a beach. Although I reckon my dad, right, being faced with having to apply sun cream or being shot in the face, he might have gone, you know what? I've had a good innings. I think in his mind, I'm pretty sure that SPF stands for sissies, probably French. By some estimates, 70% of men do not routinely apply protection when faced with the hottest thing in our solar system. It seems like an odd form of optimism until you find out how many men, when asked, think they could take a point off Serena Williams at tennis. 1 in 8 men believe that they could take a point off the best female tennis player of all time. Which sounds like a good cue for another manly hypothetical. If you are one of those blokes, explain to me how you do it.
I've got a box set of disorders. I've got dyslexia, dyspraxia, ADHD. So okay. I haven't got a clue where that ball's going.
So, if I'm right in what you're saying you don't know where it's going.
No.
So how could she?
Exactly.
I would say it doesn't matter because you wouldn't hit it. With the recent discourse around men generally tending to presume the worst, many might conclude that men's reluctance to use sunblock was down to laziness and stupidity. So let's ask our audience, of the men who don't apply sunblock, what's the main thing stopping you?
Stupidity.
Stupidity.
I think yours? I could take the sun on.
Okay. Follow-up question. Even though you just said that, do you still secretly think you can?
Yeah.
How old are you, mate?
59.
That's very honest of you, sir. Very honest. Have we got any other answers back there?
Too greasy.
It's too greasy. Okay, and does it feel sticky on your skin?
No, I'm not bothered about the skin. My wife is good enough to put it on. That feels great. But no, it's like sticky hands have got to handle other things, and then it's going to grease on that stuff and that stuff. And
so
my bottle's going to be greasy. And...
Fair enough. So it sounds like it's a convenience issue, right?
Yeah.
You know what else is inconvenient? Cancer. One problem identified by the industry is that blokes, on the whole, don't have a pre-existing skincare regime. It's normal for my wife to put on sun cream because it's normal for her to do all sorts of mysterious things to her skin. I've come to bed and been told to wait because she's moisturising her forearms. I didn't even know that that was a moisturisable region of the body. I thought the height of pampering was putting conditioner on my pubes. And if you enjoyed that joke, The In-Betweeners is available on all four. Maybe devoting a lot of time to something which enhances your appearance can feel unmasculine, but loads of blokes who don't moisturise will happily go to the gym, a place where masculinity meets narcissism, right? It's the one place that a bloke can lift up his shirt in front of a mirror and not get tasered. The other day, I saw a bloke doing bicep curls, right, while staring at himself in the mirror and on a work call. And I thought, I bet that's not the only thing he does while maintaining eye contact with himself, right? Then there are the blokes who drop their heavy weights to the floor and make a sex noise. Yeah! What noises do they make when they're actually having sex? I'd imagine it's, do you accept contactless? Now. That is a, yeah, that is, that's quite an old-fashioned joke in many ways. And I hope you'll see what I did there was something which you don't see often, as I had a setup and a punchline very close together. It's one of only two in the whole series, but I'm glad you enjoyed it. Now, maybe the problem with men and sunblock is the language. Skincare sounds a bit too pastoral, doesn't it? It sounds like you're taking your skin out for afternoon tea. The most successful male moisturiser is a brand called Bulldog. Now, it sounds macho, but it completely ignores the fact that even the most manly of men wouldn't want his face to look like a bulldog. Maybe name it after a good-looking dog breed. But in fairness, no self-respecting bloke is going to cover his face in poodle. To appeal more directly to blokes like me, sunblock needs to sound more adversarial, right? They should make a brand called Sunbastard. Putting on sun cream feels like an admission of fear, so shift the context. Call it radiation armour. New Sunbastard radiation armour. Stare at the sun and see who blinks first. I'm not manly enough to do that voice for twice. I need a little drink. I know that in an ideal world, we'd work on changing men's psychology from a young age and encourage them to ask why they need brand names to make them feel macho. But we are what we are. And be honest, right? Blokes would pay 50 quid a bottle if Jason Statham bought out an aftershave called War. I would buy that. Now, I would wager that some of the problems a British man has putting on sunblock are due to the tactile experience of applying it. But this doesn't hold blokes back in arguably more macho countries, right? Australia has a much better culture of men wearing sunblock, but Australia also has one other key thing: predictable sunny weather. It's like England fans dealing with being in the final of a major tournament. We've got no idea how to behave. That's how a grown man can end up with a flare nestled to his lower intestine. We also need to acknowledge the issues around the actual physical process of applying the cream. Now, maybe we'll do one of the lads at the nearer the front here. Which bit of your body, one of the lads at the front, do you find it hardest to put it on?
Kind of that bit.
The bit around your back?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you're saying about like, the Aussies and how they put it on. They're all ripped. I've never seen a fat Aussie. They're all shredded, so they can, you know, get the bits. I'm fat. I can't reach around there.
You're saying you can't get around to your lower back. Do you have a strategy for putting on sun cream?
Spray it on the floor and roll around in it.
Spray it on the floor and roll around in it.
Just like, you're on the bathroom floor, and then clean up afterwards.
Okay. So, like, I mean, what an incredible thing. I mean, I think, okay, what's your name, mate?
Ian.
Will you do me a solid, Ian? I've got a bottle of sun cream here. Ian, I'd like you just maybe a bit on your forearms and a bit on your face. I want you to show me what your technique would be with an actual bottle of sun cream. So you give him a round of applause as he heads up here. Have you come here? There you go. Okay, good man. Right, you keep that mic. All right, so we're looking. Right, Ian has got the sun cream. Right, he's pouring it into his hands. Let's see the kind of volume he's going there. That's a good amount. Now it all comes. Is he going to go left forearm first? He goes left forearm. This is good. Even applicate. And he's done it on the inside of his forearm. That's going to impress the Colombian judges. And so he's going to the left arm. This guy, this isn't his first rodeo. Okay. Right, in. Now, for the benefit of the people at home, Ian just rubbed sun cream behind his ears. I think Ian has absolutely hustled me here. You can't do the bit behind you. Yeah, it all goes to shit when you go and do the bit behind your back, doesn't it? It looks like, you know when a cat tries to lick the bit under its chin? Ladies and gentlemen, Ian turns out to be an absolute pro. I really love how you're going to have to explain to somebody in 18 degrees overcast weather why you're stinking of Nivea. For many men, the only other time in our lives when we're involved in the application of such creams to shoulder, chest and legs is massage as a prelude to sex. And even then, it's a process most of us would have happily done without. But we're aware that foreplay can't begin and end with pointing out the kids are asleep. Women are generally more in tune with their body because it speaks to them more often, right? The female body has more finely tuned cycles and components. For blokes, the end of puberty is the start of a long period where nothing in particular happens. There can be a decades-long truce to your early 50s when you get a surprise finger up the backside. We're swanning around feeling immortal unless told otherwise. We don't have the equivalent of smear tests to remind us which things can go wrong. We don't have mammograms. Even getting blokes to check their own balls can be a bit of a ball ache. That must be particularly hard for women to fathom, as most men are seen more than happy to have a rummage right up until you tell them that they have to. At which point they go all coy and act like it's a first date with their genitals. It turns out juggling their plums was only fun if the plums were forbidden fruit. It's not a joke, but it's a lovely sentence, I think. Perhaps this is why blokes have a reputation for being difficult to get to go to the doctors. My dad was classically stoic about his health. He died in 2015 after a short battle with pancreatic cancer. Now, I realise this is already getting a bit heavy, so we'll just split this up with another quick manly hypothetical. Who would win in a snooker match between Darth Vader and Thanos? Hands up. We get hands up. We take one from the middle and the back of the room.
Hiya, Chuck.
Hiya.
It's
am I in the Rovers?
It's got to be Darth Vader.
OK, it's got to be Darth Vader. Why would that be?
Well, like just choking with his mind over what's it, wouldn't he?
I wish you'd been in Star Wars. Back to my dad's health. Right? A nurse told us his diagnosis of pancreatic cancer was one of the most late stage she'd ever encountered. I looked at my dad and he was smiling and gave me a wink, as if to say, top that, son, top that. I'm a record breaker, in your face. Proper man. He didn't like any fuss around the process of being ill. I remember when we went to the consultation, right, to hear what was wrong with him, and the consultant, she breezed in and she said, ah, Norcott family, is it? We went, yeah. She said, I'm afraid it's not good news. And I think I'd seen too many talent shows at that time because I thought she was going to go, it's great news, you're going to the live finals. And she then added, she said, I'm afraid it is stage 4 pancreatic cancer. We went, oh. And then she said, yeah, it's the same cancer Patrick Swayze had. I was like, okay, why are you telling us that? Are we supposed to be happy that Dad's got quite a sexy cancer twin? And I looked at my dad, right, and he was frowning. I thought, he's going to kick off. And he went, who's Patrick Swayze? I was like, yeah, Dad, that is definitely the thing we need follow-up info on that. Have you got a pamphlet, maybe? And then my sister went, he was in Big Trouble in Little China. I went, no, that was Kurt Russell. He just looked like Patrick Swayze. Turns out my dad had stage 4 terminal banter. Soldiering on is something blokes like the idea of. I admire soldiering on, but it turns out there are solid reasons why we shouldn't. Men are more likely to develop cancer and women are more likely to survive it. Overall, men with any type of cancer were 6% more likely to die of their disease than women with cancer. This rose to more than 12% when comparing men and women with the same cancer type. The same. Okay, feels like we need a manly hypothetical. What would be better, never masturbating again or having to masturbate every hour on the hour?
Every hour.
Never again.
Never. So we got a guy down here that says never again in the black hoodie at the front. We'll take a couple of answers on this. He's starting to regret having answered it. Okay, so first up, give me your answer and your reason.
Well, reluctantly, I feel like it'd be better to never masturbate again. Just because, okay. You know, you never know where you're going to be, where you're out, who you're with.
Let's say it's poor grandma's funeral, do you know what I mean? And you've got to go because the alarm clock's here and you have to go.
Sorry, I feel like we just need to dial back. You just said you could be at your grandma's funeral. That is both an excellent counterfactual, but weird that that's what came into your brain. Okay, now, having heard that very strong, robust argument against, who is going for every hour on the hour? Anybody?
Every hour.
Okay, there's a guy in the second row there. Every hour on the hour, tell me why.
Well, I think nowadays I might struggle, but during GCSE study leave, not a problem.
The disparity in cancer outcomes for men and women I spoke about might come as a surprise. You might wonder why we aren't hearing more about this. One reason is that men's ability to organise for our mutual benefit is poor. It's odd that we're credited with having created the patriarchy, like a global movement to preserve men's collective privilege. So we're supposed to be looking out for each other, but not to the point that we actually help each other live. The second reason this shocking stat might pass under the radar is that people often presume men have worse cancer outcomes because of lifestyle. That's right, they do it to themselves. You know, drinking more, smoking more, engaging in more hazardous lifestyles. Going out dressed like that, eh, lads? You were asking for it. However, lifestyle factors are increasingly believed to play less of a role than previously thought. So I think we might have finally discovered the most toxic thing about masculinity. It's masculinity. Masculinity isn't toxic, it's carcinogenic. Just being male is like smoking 40 a day and drizzling whiskey on a breakfast of sautéed asbestos. I think they actually serve that in Leeds, don't they? The Weatherspoons. Asbestos Thursday. One way that women have an actual immune advantage is that estrogen, it might actually influence what are called signaling pathways. So it turns out that estrogen and testosterone literally act like men and women. If testosterone was a person, it would be a fat guy at a party riding down a slide on a tiny bike just to get a laugh, right? While estrogen is busy making sure everybody's Ubers have arrived. You all right, Dad? Rather than moaning about female biological privilege, and I suppose you could argue that pregnancy and childbirth slightly balance the books in terms of the burdens we face, we just need to accept that this makes it even more important for us to get to the doctors as soon as possible. But we don't. Why? I think, speaking personally, my biggest fear isn't me getting ill, it's my wife, right? I think she'd be all right without me in the long run, but it wouldn't work out so well for me without her. Losing my wife terrifies me. It does, it's my biggest fear, to the extent that what she thinks is foreplay is often me checking her for lumps. Yes, babe, you can be the sexy nurse and I'll be the sexy radiologist with this sexy real x-ray machine. Now raise both your hands above your head, please, and I will need to leave the room momentarily. In other ways, I don't fit the stereotype around men and health. I'm not especially stoic, but I wasn't always like that. And even when my body did make a noise, I didn't really understand often what it was saying. In 2010, I was under the impression I'd been suffering from acid reflux, right? And I was on a holiday in Egypt and it became more insistent. So I visited a hospital there and it turned out to be a cardiac issue. I got rushed in to decide if it might be fatal and spoiler alert, it wasn't. This is the point though, isn't it? We're not in tune with our bodies. I'd got to my late 30s thinking my heart was somewhere on the left of my chest and shaped like one you see in cartoons. I still thought it was like a Tom and Jerry heart. But it was a horrible experience. I was in a foreign country. I mean, they all spoke English, but have you seen the data roaming costs in Egypt? And not only that, because of religious rules, my partner wasn't allowed to spend the night in the room with me. So alone in a hospital bed with no one to turn to for comfort, I realised something quite profound. I wanted chips. Really wanted chips. On a deep level. I don't know if it was all the adrenaline and drama of getting rushed in, but I couldn't stop thinking about chips. And so at 3 a.m, a very kind male nurse called Abassi made me a chip sandwich, no doubt confirming literally everything he's ever thought about English people. He also bought me a 4-pack of Moretti as well. And, you know, a plastic chair to lob at policemen if I wanted to get back in the holiday spirit. The odd thing was that even though the diagnosis was initially concerning, I felt better to be getting a proper answer. Deep down, I knew it wasn't just acid reflux, although I do think I should get extra man points for trying to deal with a heart condition by taking Rennie. On average, men go to their GP a third less than women. They also go to the pharmacist just 4 times a year in comparison to 18 times a year for women. But let's be honest and say some of those 18 times women go will be to get pile cream for an embarrassed man. So what does the medical profession think are the leading problems with men getting stuff checked out? What do we think, as an audience, this is men and women, what do we think stops men going to the doctors as often? Hands up, have you got any theories?
They're embarrassed to go to the doctors.
What could we do? What do you think we could do to make it less embarrassing?
Just go in. There's nothing to be ashamed of.
I love the fact you're essentially just saying, man up, just get in there. Have you got any other answers?
The receptionist. The receptionist.
Okay. in the spirit of BBC impartiality, they have a very difficult job, but please tell us, say it. You can say it, I can't.
You've got to ring up at 8 o'clock in the morning before they open, and then the first question she'll ask, what's wrong with you? So she's diagnosing you. You want to speak to a doctor, you want to be seen by a doctor, but she'll go through a standard set of questions. By which point you've switched off, I'm fine. I don't need it no more. I'm okay. I'll survive. I'll live.
I love the fact within the space of 4 seconds, you got, you know what, it's fine. You're... The problem, like, when you just said to me, she says, oh, what's wrong with you? The problem with me is I'll just go, well, I don't know. I don't know if my old man really loved me. That is a dangerous question to ask a stand-up comedian. It's like, I don't know if I ever really feel true joy. That was a bit depressing. Any more?
To be honest, I think you alluded to it just then. It is, I think, for a lot, genuinely fear. You know, society demands strength and kind of presence where, you know, admitting there's something wrong that you can't fight off, that you need help, is very hard for men. And that calling up the doctors is a big deal with most of things missing it, effectively.
Well, I think you're right. I think fear is a massive part of it. Yeah, no, I think give a round of applause. I think it's a very... I think you make a good point, you know. People talk about being uncomfortable during exams as well and stuff like that. And I think this is where men's issues with going to doctors tie in with the reticence to use sunblock. Because whether it's putting on cream in a public place or being prodded by a GP, we're just not match fit, right? Now, now I could just say, isn't it awful that men have these reservations and shouldn't we raise our boys to be more open and less blah, 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 blah. But none of that deals with the fact that it is what it is, right? And it has been for some time. So we need some practical methods in the meantime which help less of us get skin cancer, right? So in our end of show recommendations to a minister for men, I'd like to suggest the following. 50 is too late for a prostate exam. By which point, you're likely to have had an unbroken half century of not being penetrated by anything, right? It's too long. Give lads a prostate exam from the age of 25, even if they don't need it, right? Just poke them in the ears, put stuff up their nose, and just make them take lateral flow tests every day, just so they match fit. You could call in younger men. GPs could call in younger men under the cover of more manly reasons, right? The GP could just text and say, bro, I saw your overhead kick on TikTok, man. That must have put serious strain in your delts, G. But then when he gets there, ask if you can take a blood pressure test just to see if being such a nailed on ledge is getting to them. Men love efficiency, right? So bring the doctors where the men already are. Situate them next to the stand selling chicken balti pies at football. So let me just check the temperature of that pie for you. And while you're at it, remove your trousers. Gamify it. Men love a game they can beat. So let them punch a little stamp every time they go to the doctors. And on your 8th visit, you get to meet Jeremy Clarkson. Or to get some extra cardio in, why not get a match of sun cream paintball going, right? There's something acceptable about a man taking care of himself if it involves pain and guns. You have to make it non-tactile macho fun. So you know how you have those coin-operated car washes you get at petrol stations? Have something like that on a beach, right? You put in a quid, you stick some goggles, and you run through it while getting sprayed with Factor 50. Is it stupid? Yes. Is it a bit immature? Yes. But so are we. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Jeff Norcott's Working Man's Club. Jeff Norcott's Working Men's Club was written and performed by Jeff Norcott. The producer was Ed Morrish, and it was a peer production for BBC Radio 4. All right, we finished recording the show. Just be honest. The blokes who don't normally apply sun cream, how many people feel like they're more likely to do that on their next holiday?
No.
Awesome. Laughing and learning.
And we've got fresh late-night comedy for you later tonight on Radio 4. If you thought the election was done and dusted, then think again. John Holmes is back with a special election edition of The Skewer at 11:15.
I'm Rory Stewart, and I want to make a case for ignorance. Because ignorance isn't simply the opposite of knowledge, it's part of what it means to be human.
There is something overvaluing of the self to say, I have got to know everything. No, I don't have to know everything. I have to know a man who does, or a woman.
Ignorance is inseparable from knowledge. I think embracing this can help us become more humble, creative, and wise.
If we indulge this idea that there's a maximal amount of information, that we're going to be disappointed and we're going to do damage to others.
The long history of ignorance from Confucius to QAnon starts on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.